Getting ducks for Ian, Quinn, and Colin was not without a predicate, but it was a chance to travel backwards and fill in around old memories with new ones. And a chance, truth be told, to find new stories by returning to one from the past. The duck of my childhood had been the source of many stories, some a little funny, some a little sad, and some a little inspirational. And it was the story of that duck's introduction to the wading pool, with a bit of poetic license applied, that was the most inspiring and proved the power of a good narrative. It was the first story I ever wrote, starting on the evening of my 8th grade graduation, when, after listening to a commencement speech by an admissions officer of Butler County Community College, the pieces of memory that make up the tale began to come together and suggest themselves as the core of something that would be a much better graduation speech than the one I had just heard. This version of the story left out the details of things that could be called animal cruelty, and focused on more of a coming-of-age theme suited to commencement. The story, as told then, was about how the duck learned by following the dog that both protected it and taught it everything she knew, raising it to be bold and wise and determined. And it was about how, on the cusp of being fully grown, the duck one day slid down the slide of a plastic wading pool and for the first time floated on water, and how he seemed to realize over the course of days that he had such troubles with barking, jumping, and running because this was not what he was built for. This was not his set of talents, and that his own set of talents were ones the dog, try as she might, could not understand or teach. And the story ended with the duck deciding one day to stay behind in the wading pool when the dog went on to the typical activities of chasing horses and digging holes. This was the perfect story for a graduation speech, because parents and teachers in the audience would hear in it a recognition of their sacrifices and their efforts, that they had given their all and that they could not be held responsible for the results because so much depended on the limits of what they had to work with. For graduates, the story would resonate because they would hear the message, "I'm free, and it's okay for me to find my own way." The problem with the story as a graduation speech arose from the fact that by the time I graduated from high school, I was neither the valedictorian nor the salutatorian, and therefore didn't have a place on stage from which to tell it. The solution was to become the president of the National Honor Society, the third person who had a chance for an address at graduation time. Robert Frost wrote about how way leads on to way, and it did. Yet here I was, coming back to a point I knew, our boys still eager after our spring break trip to get ducks. So on a Tuesday night, we drove to Tractor Supply Company to get ducklings the size of mice, an infrared heat lamp to keep them warm, a poultry waterer, a plastic feeder, and 25 pounds of starter food, suitable, the label said, for chickens, turkeys, and ducks. Quinn got a book on ducks for Christmas, and on our way into town, he looked up the various breeds and their characteristics. It had a table that went on for several pages describing the color, size, temperament, laying habits, meatiness, nesting preferences, and history of each type. Indian runners stand straight up. Mallards have the green heads. Muscovies breed like rabbits. And khaki Campbells lay with regularity. His efforts were wasted, though, because Tractor Supply had only two varieties, yellow fuzzy ones with orange bills and orange feet, white pekins, a breed known for their friendliness, often raised to eat, and ones the color of winter leaves with greenish-brown bills and feet that almost matched. These latter were not labeled, and so Quinn was unable to discern the characteristics they'd display as adults. However, there really wasn't that much discernment going on. The boys wanted all of them. We settled on 6, 3 of each color. They raced around the 10-foot galvanized feed tank, trying not to be caught, while the store employee filled our order. He put them in cardboard carriers, each one the size of a fast food kid's meal, 3 to a box. The ducklings made sounds I can barely remember now. They were not quacks or cheeps, but something of a mix. High-pitched, yet with some authority. Each evening, the boys would hold the baby birds, hoping they would grow accustomed to it. A tan cardboard packing box in the garage with old hay in the bottom became the duckling nursery. But in their toddler enthusiasm, they made a mess of it, spilling water and turning the bottom into a limp sogginess, wicking its way up the sides, which then traded their flatness and sharp corners for bulges and curves. A duck hutch was advertised in the farm and garden section of Craigslist. From the picture, it looked like a sturdy construction with solid walls, a top covered with roofing shingles, hinged for cleaning, a wire mesh floor, and small door to close to keep the ducks in. Perfect, it looked, except for one drawback. It came with four adult ducks. It seemed contrary to the purpose to buy a duck hutch that was already full of ducks. But it was the only duck hutch advertised on Craigslist, and that box was getting pudding-like. It would not do as a place to bring the ducklings to the adolescence from which I'd envisioned I'd let them roam free. So I bought the hutch with its four residents and a plan. The plan was to let two of these golden layers, the breed of this new troop, live out at the pond in the floating but doorless house that I'd built over Christmas, and have the other two live as foster parents in the duckling's hutch back at the garage. I carried the wooden box home in our pickup truck and drove to the pond. The general idea was to open the hutch door, let two ducks out, and close the door again. I put down the tailgate with a thud, swung open the door with a squeaking of its hinges, and waited in the silence of the ducks huddled in the far corner. They just stayed there. I thought I understood what the problem was. They could see me. The solution, an obvious one, was to step out of view, which I did. It turned out that I understood how ducks think better than I'd imagined. Almost as soon as I stepped away, it was like a duck explosion as they fled the confines of the hutch and immediately went to this newfound water. The ducks had arrived by mail as babies, the seller told me. From their postal package, they were transferred to their concrete-floored pen, surrounded by chicken wire with a hutch in the corner. The pen, I had seen, was placed in the manicured suburban backyard. For a year, they had lived there. Now they found freedom, and there was no way I was getting them back in the box. So I took the hutch to the garage, and we found we had gone from having no birds to having two small flocks.